Back in October, the world was sort of stunned to see these two UFO videos recorded by the Pentagon, or it came out of the Pentagon. Whether it's an official release or not is somewhat in question. It certainly is official video in that it was recorded by the U.S. military. One of those UFO videos, the so-called Tic Tac UFO, was recorded by warplanes attached to the USS Nimitz group off the coast of Southern California. The other UFO video, the so-called gimbal video, is of unknown origin. I think a lot of people have assumed it had something to do with the USS Nimitz and was recorded by the same outfit. It was not. In this hour, we're going to get down to the bottom line on those two videos with someone who has analyzed them, who has seen them in and out, and who knows what they mean and what they don't mean. His name is Dr. Hal Puthoff, the director of the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin. His research interests range from theoretical studies of gravitation, cosmology, energy research. He was with Stanford Research International, has worked for the National Security Agency as a consultant to CIA and studying remote viewing, works with NASA and its Breakthrough Propulsion Physics Initiative. As I mentioned in the first hour, he was also involved with the National Institute for Discovery Science and with BASS, and was a consultant to the ATIP Pentagon UFO study. He is now with the To the Stars Academy that was founded by Tom DeLonge, and Dr. Puthoff joins us in just a moment. Stick around. Well, I've been waiting for this for a long time. Dr. Hal Puthoff, welcome to Coast to Coast.
George, it's a pleasure to be here.
I read off just a little synopsis of your background. You are, you have such solid scientific credentials. You're considered a brilliant guy by colleagues all over the world. You published all these papers. I think you've been nominated for a Nobel Prize at least twice, and yet you sort of risk it all in the pursuit of what some would call fringe topics, crazy subjects. Give me some kind of an idea about how you got to this point that you would be associated with folks chasing UFOs.
Well, it certainly was kind of a squirrely path to get from there to here. But anyway, as part of my work at Stanford, I worked on lasers and quantum electronics and so on, even co-authored a textbook that was published in English, Russian, French, and Chinese. So here I'd launched my really terrific career in lasers and quantum electronics, but it turned out that as part of my graduate school, I had a stint as a naval intelligence officer with the National Security Agency. And so it turns out that plays a key role later. And so eventually, when I left Stanford University and went to SRI International to do laser research and so on, it turned out that just on a lark, I ended up doing a little ESP or PK experiment with Ingo Swann, who's a very talented kind of guy. And I distributed that around, and pretty soon the CIA landed on my doorstep. And it turned out that they were concerned that the Russians were putting millions of dollars for over a decade into the area of ESP research. No scientists in America even thought there was such a thing. And they looked into my background, so I had all these security clearances at NSA. I was at SRI that had lots of black programs anyway. And I was a hard scientist, physicist, and that's what they thought they needed. Would I mind taking a look to see if there's anything to this stuff? And actually, the truth of the matter is, they were hoping that I would basically find out it's all nonsense, so they didn't have to worry about it and they could close the books. Well, as your listeners would know, that eventually turned into a 20-year, $20 million project program, known popularly toward the end as Project Stargate. And so it was in that process of doing those experiments that I began to realize there's a lot more to our scientific or worldview than we usually give it credit for. And I have to admit that even throughout that program, every time I would go in to do an experiment of the remote viewing type, as we called it, I would ask myself, what am I doing here? I'm a physicist. This can't possibly work. And then we get another terrific result. So based on that, I just got greened, I guess you'd say, by the situation. And so even when I left the SRI to take up being president and CEO of EarthTech International, this academic arm, Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin, I was basically greened to these kinds of things. And so when John Alexander, for example, came along and asked me to join his UFO working group, I did do that. And through the connection with John, I ended up being on the science advisory board of Robert Bigelow's NIDS, National Institute for Discovery Science, that you covered pretty thoroughly in the first hour. And so, of course, as part of that, I saw many things. And the truth of the matter is, most of them, we never did get to a point that we could explain. And so it was along this period that, as it turns out, people at DIA, as analysts at DIA, decided that they wanted to investigate the kind of stuff that was happening on the ranch, but primarily really the UFO aspect. And so they approached Senator Reid, and he thought it was a good idea and collected his other two senator colleagues, Stevens from Alaska and Dan Inouye from
Hawaii.
And they're all part of the special access program, black money kinds of research. And so I was asked, because I was already known to Bob Bigelow, if I would help respond to the request. Now, a lot of people say, okay, well, this is just some kind of sweetheart deal between Reid and Bigelow, both being from Nevada and so on. Truth of the matter is, there was a broad area announcement out of DIA. Any aerospace corporation could apply for the bid, for the grant, but it turned out that Bigelow got it. And so that's how I suddenly ended up being immersed in what we now call the ATIP program.
$22 million over the period of time. Some people say it went from 2007 to 2012. Some say it's 2008 to 2011. Still, in Pentagon terms, it's not a lot of money, is it?
That's not a lot of money. And usually programs that do require a lot of money are programs that have a lot of build out of equipment or a lot of personnel and so on. But basically, this was an analytical group to evaluate data, to collect data and evaluate it. So it was primarily personnel costs that went into it, although it's also true that Bigelow was asked to put some special buildings together with high security to begin to store materials that would be coming along as part of the program. So, but it's not a lot of money, I have to admit.
You have, so you worked for the NSA for a while. You were a consultant to CIA. You're with Bob Bigelow and NIDS, and they always, whenever I read Bob Bigelow's name in some UFO publication, they attach the word shadowy to it, the shadowy Bob Bigelow. Then you write an RFP that goes to the DIA, and then back in October, you're standing on a stage with Tom DeLonge and other principals of To the Stars. Tom, of course, has taken a lot of heat and lumps. And I'm just wondering, that makes you part of the cabal, doesn't it?
It does sound like I'm part of the cabal, doesn't it? And certainly, I can actually understand how it is that your average onlooker out there in the UFO field would come to that conclusion. Because after all, they see suddenly this collaboration emerging for a new startup, the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science. It involves Lou Elizondo, who just left as being the program director the ATIP program in the Pentagon. And then you've got Chris Mellon, former Deputy Assistant Secretary of Defense for Intelligence, Jim Semivan, who's a high-level fellow out of the DDO. You've got Steve Justice, longtime program director at the Skunk Works, and myself with decades involvement in CIA, DIA, and as a contractor and so on. And so I can imagine that people look at that setup and say, okay, this has got to be some kind of massive conspiracy. This must have been in the plans for forever, and it's trying to pull the American public along in some direction concerning belief and so on. Truth of the matter is, the people on this list all have had high access, of course, and the point is that having that high access put us in a position, one by one, to recognize that the subject area was not being handled as effectively and efficiently as it could, that it's all locked up in various kinds of stovepipe situations. I mean, just to give you a perfect example, these videos that have come out where everyone is looking at them and analyzing them and so on, I mean, those videos were there in the Pentagon, and what could they do to get additional help to evaluate them? It really wasn't a way to do that. And so the idea that we would come together and form a public benefit corporation, as we call it, in order to begin to get this, put some sunshine on this area and get it out to where it's no longer a subject of ridicule, hopefully, but rather something that people can take part in and see results being made. And so it's a cabal in the best sense, I would say, and that is we're taking the knowledge and information and results we know, and to the degree that any of it can be made public because it's not classified, and further work that can be done that's not classified, this can become part of the societal's public discussion. So it's just the opposite, really, of the people who would say, you know, this is some giant cabal that they worked on poor Lou Elizondo and finally pushed him out the door to be a lightning rod for all kinds of conspiracy theories. No, it was just the opposite. These are all hardworking people, all people who, one way or another, ran across this subject area and knew there was a lot to it, actually, and has been over the years. And there's been difficulty in figuring out how to deal with it. Why is that? Well, in this subject area, even inside the government, what do you have to deal with? You've got fear, you've got careerism, you've got incompetence, you've even got fundamental religious views saying this is not an area that American taxpayer money should be spent on. That set of comments came from Colm Kelleher, who was Bob Bigelow's basically deputy manager for the ATIP program. And he's right. Those are the kind of things we always ran into. So despite the fact that there was funding and work was getting done and it was getting done professionally, nonetheless, we had to brief other groups. We had to try to set up programs in other areas. And we ran into all kinds of problems. So I think this giant step that we took to come out from behind the curtain, so to speak, and set up something that the public can have access to and participate in, that was really a step in the right direction.
You know, I don't have a security clearance, so I'm just basing this on what I've picked up over the years. But my sense of it is that military would have these encounters with unknown aerial objects from some place else that could perform these incredible maneuvers. A report is made, it goes somewhere, it gets stuck in a drawer, that there's no central body that analyzes this stuff. It does no one any good to make too much of a big fuss over it. So, for example, like with the USS Nimitz incident, that happened in 2004. Those videos were recorded, they went somewhere, and no one did anything with it until Bass and ATIP and you guys came along.
That's exactly the case. And one of the nice things that we've arranged to do on the To the Stars website, we have a link to something called COI, Community of Interest. And tapping on that link, you can get to the videos as you've already seen them in, say, the New York Times or whatever. But in addition, we have all the documentation. It was arranged in advance before those videos left the Pentagon that they went through massive review typical of releasing previously classified information. And all the chain of custody taking place as the videos were transferred out, all that information is there. So it's possible to get a complete rundown. So rather than just being a video that, what the heck, you know, it might have just shown up on the internet someplace. In this case, they have a complete chain of custody and a lot of detail, you know, describing even the Raytheon FLIR systems, forward looking infrared radar systems used to gather the data. And so I think that's a step in the right direction.
So is this an official release? I mean, someone had to green light that. Yes, it could be released.
That's right. I mean, it was released out of the element that Luis Elizondo was in charge of, and he was the authority there for how to deal with that information. And of course, as part of the long-ranging ATIP program, he archived all this material and so on. But there it was. I mean, there was some analysis going on in-house. I mean, in addition to the DOD and the Pentagon, we had Navy and CIA people were involved in analyses. But nonetheless, not as much as what really needs to be done. And so that was the idea in setting up this startup to the STARS Academy of Arts and Science, to set up a situation and assuming we can get the funding to be able to carry out these kind of analyses in great detail.
Let's talk about, we'll go to a break in about 3 minutes. I think that might be enough time to talk about the TikTok video, the USS Nimitz video. What can you tell us about that? You know, we've seen amateur experts online saying it's a bug on the, it's a bug on a windshield, or it's a lens flare, or it's the sound of a vacuum cleaner or a lawnmower. What can you tell us about why you were impressed by that video?
Well, primarily because it isn't just the video. I mean, that's what most people have had access to and are attempting to analyze and come up with alternatives, like, well, it's just a jet in the distance, because that also makes infrared spots that can be detected and so on. But the full data on the Nimitz involves radar tracking these this object coming in from 60,000 feet, dropping down to 50 feet in a matter of seconds. There are the radar records of that. And then you've got the pilots. Dave Fravor has given interviews on this. You can find it all over the internet and also on the To the Stars Academy website, where he actually got into what you might almost call a dogfight with it. And that is, he circled around it and it circled around him. And they got very close. I mean, this is nose to nose. And so in that situation, you could tell exactly the size of it, about 46 feet across. And so he could see the accelerations that it could accomplish. I mean, in that very incident, for example, although they were supposed to be doing an exercise at some point, they had been rerouted to check this thing out. And then after the thing took off, the radar operator said, well, this thing, whatever it is, has gone to the place where you're supposed to have your training thing. Well, I mean, it was miles and miles away, and it got there in a few seconds, and no sonic boom. I mean, so there's so much data well beyond just the videotapes, all integrated together, and that's what makes this kind of observation absolutely spectacular kind of thing.
Well, there's also the gimbal video, which we're going to ask you to analyze, and then there are promises of other videos, and I want to know if you've seen those as well. We were talking with Dr. Hal Putoff about the Tic Tac video, the gimbal video, UFO studies by Bass and the Pentagon, and much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. Dr. Hal Putoff from the Institute for Advanced Studies in Austin. We're talking about the Pentagon's UFO study, conducted through the auspices of a private company, Bass, founded by Robert Bigelow. And as you've if you've been listening, you know we're talking about the Tic Tac video. Big question is, how does this work? Did we figure out how these objects can make these kind of leaps and fly circles around our most advanced weapon systems and platforms? And what about that gimbal video that was also released by the Pentagon? And will we eventually see other videos that have been released? Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. How put off, we all saw the Tic Tac video, the USS Nimitz battle group. How do we know it's not the Russians or the Chinese or us, some other classified program that not everyone has been told about?
Well, we don't absolutely rule that out. The twofold nature of the threat as far as the ATIP program goes was specified very specifically. One is there a current threat from this phenomena? Could be a foreign derivation, could be off-world, but nonetheless, it's obviously being deployed and tested, including in our country. And then there's the future threat, which is really concerning, and that is potential terrestrial adversaries achieving significant breakthroughs in the development of game-changing disruptive technologies based on evaluation of the UAP phenomena from sensor data or crash-retrieved materials. So our best analysts, and based on the intelligence information we have so far, we've not been able to track it back to Russian or Chinese. Is there some other terrestrial society off the grid? I mean, everything is on the table, because we're strictly only going to pay attention to what we can observe and what we can prove. And so basically, looking at the characteristics and matching them up against what we know of our special systems and other foreign adversary systems, it just doesn't seem to match anything that we know about. Now, that's not to say that we can't make progress in trying to figure out how this works. In fact, a large part of my own activity in this program was to go through the physics. As Eric described, I commissioned 38 papers to give us the best physics in all kinds of new areas, like metallic glasses or plasma propulsion or whatever. There was a model that came to the fore that I explored in some detail, which I think has some merit. And that is what we call space-time metric engineering. And that is when you look at the effects that are associated, rapid accelerations, the changes of direction instantly, the ability to hover, all these things, as wild as they are, the truth of the matter is, if you take general relativity equations and write them down one side of a piece of paper, and then you write down all of the oddball observations on the other side of the piece of paper, you can get a reasonable match between them. So that sounds good. The problem is, though, what it would take in the general relativistic physics that we know and love at the present time is we just don't have the energy densities that could possibly create those effects. So that makes me, from a physicist standpoint, extremely skeptical that this is something that we have in the back room or the Russians or the Chinese have.
You know, the word threat in the ATIP title has a lot of people upset. These are our friendly space brothers. They're no threat to us. They haven't attacked us. They haven't wiped out cities. The threat that you see, though, is that the Russians and Chinese could be studying this and figure this out and get this technology ahead of us. When I talked to Senator Reid late last year, he had said that he thought, and I'm not sure what his sources are, that he thought the Russians and Chinese were studying this stuff. And now we were studying it for a while and then stopped.
Yeah, there's absolutely no doubt that they're studying them. I've read detailed classified documents on the Russian work. The military equivalents around the world are all concerned about this for the very same reasons. The Russians would be worried that we could reverse engineer if we got some technology under our fingertips. So So that's definitely a major issue. So there's no getting around it. This is taken seriously. It has to be considered a threat. Now, are there any indications? Well, it's true that we haven't had any obvious hostile attack. On the other hand, it's also the case, as Harry Reapack mentioned in an interview with you, that these craft have infiltrated our missile silos, our nuclear missile silos, and have on occasion taken them offline. Once or twice could be some kind of coincidence, but there's a whole northern tier where this happened at base after base after base. And it turns out the same thing has happened in Russia as well. And so you have two ways of interpreting it. One is that they're just checking out that they know how to stop it if we get too frisky here, and therefore that'd be a nice, benign interpretation. On the other hand, if there's some thought that eventually there will be some hostile interaction between us, then they might be wanting to check that they can be sure to take out our nuclear missile silo. So from the standpoint of the Pentagon, whereas all the other people out there can kind of speculate that it might be this, it might be that, and they hope it's this, and they hope it's that, in the Pentagon and in the intelligence communities, you can only work to determine what actually is the facts. And in the absence of data to the contrary or proof to the contrary, you have to assume that there could be a threat aspect, whether from the phenomenon itself or, as we've already discussed, from a potential adversary making game-changing disruptive technology based on their evaluations.
I had heard, and I'm not sure if it's public or if it's true, but I had heard that there were multiple incidents and encounters with tic-tac type technology, that the increasing frequency is sort of one of the things that convinced Luis Elizondo to leave the Pentagon to go join To the Stars Academy and to work on this problem.
That's exactly right. though you hear that the program may have shut down in 2012 or whatever, the truth of the matter is tic-tac incidents off the east coast of the United States that have interfered with our air flight plans and activities. I mean, it's absolutely an unbelievable rush of that kind of phenomena happening. And so even in the gimbal video, even though in the gimbal video you only see a given craft, when you dig down into the details, which you can do if you go to the community of interest link on the To the Stars Academy of Arts and Science, it turns out that in the verbal transcripts that are presented, they see on their larger radar sites, while they're getting a nice red picture of the gimbal that they're watching, that there's a whole fleet of them. I mean, quite a number of them, all flying around. So it's not just kind of a one-off phenomena. And it seems to be happening as massively these days as ever.
The gimbal video is not the same as the Tic Tac 2004 incident. It shows object that seems to have a field around it. Do you know what that field is?
Don't know. Basically on the FLIR, what you're seeing is basically a temperature distribution, and so it could simply be that it's heat or it's cold compared to the heat of the object. So we don't have any idea, but basically what that FLIR device picks up is basically the temperature distribution. So we know it has something to do with the temperature, but beyond that, there's no way to interpret it as some kind of electromagnetic aura or whatever.
Tom DeLonge and Luis Elizondo have made public statements about other videos, as many as two dozen, that have already come out of the Pentagon. Have you seen them, and do you know what the plans are for their eventual release?
I've seen one additional one that we're planning on getting out relatively soon. It's certainly an interesting video. You see, watching this thing and zeroed in just like on these other two videos. Then at some point it just takes off like a shot. I mean, it's sort of unreal if you talk to the pilots about it. And there are other videos that I'm told, but I haven't looked at any.
So what is the eventual plan? And the study is done, the BAS part of the study is done. People are still collecting information, according to you and Eric Davis. Is there some more formal program underway? Is it some of this going to be funneled to the STARS to analyze and evaluate and figure out?
The program in the Pentagon is certainly continuing. I think there's a fair chance that it will continue at an accelerated pace. And to the degree that this sort of community of interest thing can be set up to work, we anticipate seeing cooperation and collaboration with possibly the Pentagon directly or with other aerospace corporations who get involved that we would be subcontractors to. So there's a lot going on behind the scenes to set up new funding organizations and so on. People have complained, well, why is To the STARS sort of not going anywhere very fast? Well, the truth of the matter is, for what we want to do, it needs funding. And so raising the money, the sort of crowdfunding approach is works to a certain degree, but to really to get a robust technical organization going, because the reason I joined and the reason Steve Justice joined from the Skunk Works is that we don't want to see this just as a smart kind of thing, getting information out to the public, although that's a major piece of it. We also want to see and get started various technical projects and programs that take advantage of some of the information that's been learned. A lot of the data within the BAS program is archived in a tremendous amount of materials you can possibly believe. Bob Bigelow had something like 46 people working there, putting all this stuff together. I mean, just to give you one example, we looked at Calaris Island, Brazil case, 1977, 1978, hundreds of UAVs observed by civilians in the Brazilian Air Force investigative team called Operation Plate. They got more than 1,000 pages of documents, logs, sketches, and maps, more than 500 photographs, greater than 15 hours of motion film, measured a lot of physiological effects and medical injuries, and so put together a whole database of all of that. Eventually, a lot of that material, this is part of the hope as the To the STARS moves forward, is that we will be able to arrange on a case-by-case basis, study-by-study basis, to possibly release some of this material. At the present time, it's Bigelow proprietary, as it should be, and so there'll be negotiation over attempting to put some of that data out. So that's
well, a lot of people have filed requests through FOIA. I'm one of them. You mentioned the scenario where maybe the Russians or Chinese learn something based on a crash. One of the most intriguing sentences in the New York Times report mentioned an exotic material of unknown origin that was at Bigelow Aerospace for a while. Is that from a crash? Do you think crashes have happened? Or can you say?
Detailed proof that crashes have happened would be still a highly classified piece of data.
Well, that's an answer of sorts.
Yeah, there has been one leaked document. How it got leaked, I'll never know, which is out there, that talks about some crashes that we were able to verify what was a real document. So my opinion is that there are probably at least materials. Now, it wouldn't necessarily have to be crash of an entire craft, but it could be a piece blown off and whatever by a lightning strike or a missile or whatever. So I'm not surprised to find out that there's a discussion of material being available. We've had an opportunity to look at some unusual material, and so I think that's a big area that will become more significant as time goes on.
You're killing me, Hal. You had a chance to look at some material?
I did. And the interesting thing about it was that couldn't figure out a very complex material. When you talk to people that are doing this kind of research, you find out, it isn't that, all the elements in the periodic table we know about. So you're not finding some new element that you didn't realize was in the periodic table. No, it's more like putting together layers of various kinds of material that you wouldn't expect to be able to be layered, and that the result at the end of the day is that it has certain unusual characteristics that you wouldn't have predicted in advance. So that's the kind of thing that to a physicist is the most interesting.
You know, the first time I met you, we were on a flight to go meet Philip Corso. It was before his
Yes.
book came out, before the world heard from him, and he was talking about something he had learned at the Pentagon about how alien technology was engineered, atoms at a time. I don't know if it's this material you're talking about fits with that, but it's amazing that it's come full circle, sort of.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. So it'll probably be some time before we really learn a lot about materials, or even if we figure them out, how to make them. And they can be very, I mean, let's face it, even 10 years ago, no one would have thought of making graphene or whatever. I mean, so our own science is coming up to speed pretty rapidly. And so that means that if there are materials available, then as time goes on, with our increased acuity in examining materials and evaluating them, we'll probably learn more as time goes on if more materials become available.
Dr. Hal Puthoff, can't thank you enough for being with us. I hope you'll come back. There's so much more to talk about. And I basically, if we've learned one thing, it's that this deserves to be studied. And if we don't study it and figure it out, someone else will, right?
That's certainly the case.
All right. Look forward to whatever comes next from To the Stars Academy. I'll be watching it. Thank you, Hal. Appreciate it for being here.
Okay, thanks, George, for having me on.
We'll be back in a moment here, changing gears. Foo Fighters take us into the break on Coast to Coast AM.